Following is a class by His Holiness Devamrita Swami on Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 9th Chapter, text number 26, recorded on the 9th of August 2015 in Auckland.
Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 9, The Passing Away of Bhishmadeva, text 26.
Purusha swabhava vihitan yathavanam yathashrayamam vairagya rago padibhyam amnato bhayalakshanan.
Translation. At Maharaj Yudhisthira's inquiry, Bhishmadev first defined all the classifications of castes and orders of life in terms of the individual's qualifications. Then he systematically, in twofold divisions, described counteraction by detachment and interaction by attachment. Purport. It's a long purport. I think we'll read half of it. The conception of four castes and four orders of life, as planned by the Lord himself, is to accelerate transcendental qualities of the individual person so that he may gradually realize his spiritual identity and thus act accordingly to get free from material bondage or conditional life. In almost all the Puranas, the subject matter is described in the same spirit, and so also in the Mahabharata. It is more elaborately described by Bhishmadev in the Shanti Parva, beginning from the 60th chapter. The Varnashrama Dharma is prescribed for the civilized human being just to train him to successfully terminate human life. Self-realization is distinguished from the life of lower animals engaged in eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. Bhishmadev advised for all human beings 9 qualifications. Number 1, not to become angry. 2, not to lie. 3, to equally distribute wealth. 4, to forgive. 5, to beget children only by one's legitimate wife. 6, to be pure in mind and hygienic in body. 7, not to be inimical toward anyone. 8, to be simple. And 9, to support servants or subordinates. One cannot be called a civilized person without acquiring the above-mentioned preliminary qualities. Besides these, the brahmanas, the intelligent men, the administrative men, the mercantile community, and the laborer class must acquire special qualities in terms of occupational duties mentioned in all the Vedic scriptures. For the intelligent men, controlling the senses is the most essential qualification. It is the basis of morality. Sex indulgence, even with a legitimate wife, must also be controlled, and thereby family control will automatically follow. An intelligent man abuses his great qualifications if he does not follow the Vedic way of life. This means he must seriously make a study of the Vedic literatures, especially of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. For learning Vedic knowledge, one must approach a person who is 100% engaged in devotional service. He must not do things which are forbidden in the Shastras. A person cannot be a teacher if he drinks or smokes. In the modern system of education, the teacher's academic qualification is taken into consideration without evaluation of his moral life. Therefore, the result of education is misuse of high intelligence in so many ways. The Kshatriya, or the administrative class, is especially advised to give charity and not to accept charity in any circumstances. Modern administrators raise subscriptions for some political functions, but never give charity to the citizens in any state function. It is just the reverse in the injunctions of the Shastras. The administrative class must be well-versed in the Shastras, but must not take to the profession of teachers. The administrators should never pretend to become nonviolent and thereby go to hell. When Arjuna wanted to become a nonviolent coward on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he was severely chastised by Lord Krishna. The Lord degraded Arjuna at that time to the status of an uncivilized man for his avowed acceptance of the cult of nonviolence. The administrative class must be personally trained in military education. Cowards should not be elevated to the presidential throne by dint of numerical votes only. The monarchs were all chivalrous personalities, and therefore monarchy should be maintained, provided the monarch is regularly trained in the occupational duties of a king. In fighting, the king or the president should never return home without being hurt by the enemy. The so-called king of today never visits the war field. He is very much expert in artificially encouraging the fighting strength in the hope of false national prestige. As soon as the administrative class is turned into a gang of mercantile and laborer men, the whole machinery of government becomes polluted. So whoever's doing class tomorrow can continue from there. Om Agana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militang Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Arjuna wanted to become a nonviolent coward on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, the purport says here. Why should we blame Arjuna? Why did Krishna chastise him so severely for concocting an artificial cult of nonviolence? It's all about Arjuna's swabhava, his own acquired qualities. This verse begins with Purusha Swabhava Vihitan. The human being, by his own acquired qualities, has a prescription. This is the difference between human civilization and a barbarian society. Human beings understand that they have prescribed obligations, commitments, and therapies according to their acquired material nature, swabhava. Of course, swabhava at its deepest level means your original spiritual identity. In the context of this verse, however, swabhava is referring to your own acquired material nature and propensities. Without understanding that human bodies have prescriptions, just like you go to a regular doctor, and he or she will give you a prescription for your situation. Similarly, all of human life has prescribed behavior. Therefore, Krishna condemned Arjuna for being cowardly. Why? Because Arjuna is not acting according to the prescription for his particular propensities. Now you might say, well, what is it of Krishna's concerns? Because Arjuna is not acting according to the script. This is the Western contamination, which has spread all over the world, of course, through consumerism, global consumerism. the Western originated syndrome or trip is that you're just an individual. You've got no obligations, no ties. You're not bound in any kind of way. Just be yourself, whatever that is. You, if there's one obligation you have, that's to just do whatever you feel like doing. That's your obligation. Do as you feel for the moment. Do what you wish. That's offered as the highest way of life. If you can plan your life so that most of the time you're doing what you wish, then what a successful person you are. Then supposedly you can die peacefully, satisfied. I did what I wanted to do. Of course, the bhakti yogi can deconstruct this fantasy. And as you become more and more expert in presenting Bhagavad Gita, you can do the greatest service for society by helping people to deconstruct the illusions that they've accepted as core, as essential to their life. Krishna's devotee knows that you're never doing what you wish. At every moment, you're under control of your body and mind. And your own body and mind are under the control of the material nature. So what is this talk about? Do what you wish, do what you feel. You're actually feeling the modes of material nature. Although you don't recognize that. Krishna points this out in Bhagavad Gita. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarasa. Ankara pramutatma kataham iti manyate. The fool thinks, I'm doing what I wish, I'm doing what I feel. But the actuality is that the modes of material nature are sweeping you away. Your body is prone to certain influences because your body is composed of certain influences. If your body is predominantly in passion and ignorance, when the modes of nature, passion and ignorance, push you, you have to act passionately. Now some people say, oh, this sounds fatalistic. You mean everything I do is determined by the modes and I don't have any freedom? Do you mean to say that the modes pushed me to be with on a Saturday to be with Jill instead of Jane? No, but the modes push you to be with someone. But you think, because I chose Jill instead of Jane, I'm individual, I'm free. Whereas the bhakti yogi looks at the whole contraption, the whole mess, and says, you're just under the gun of Rajaguna, the mode of passion. What does it matter whether it was with Jill or Jane? So Western society constructs a false sense of individuality and gives you a false sense of freedom. Therefore, when people hear statements like, the Varnashram Dharma is prescribed for the civilized human being just to train him to successfully terminate human life. People are bewildered. What do you mean, terminate human life? What is this talk about finish up your business in this lifetime? Where does all that talk come from? Just express yourself. Have a sense of inner fulfillment, no matter where, what that fulfillment comes from or how long it lasts. So what if it's just for a few moments? It's something, isn't it? This is the gospel that is covering the whole world. Even India now is getting into it. Even in India, they have the attitude, we'll show the West who's the best at sense gratification. We're late to the party, but we'll be the best. This is what's happening. So in order to save yourself from this catastrophe, you need transcendental knowledge. So you can deconstruct your individual situation and the situation of society. This false conception of freedom. and individual expression. It ruins relationships. Just like here in New Zealand. People don't expect relationships to last. They don't even plan on it anymore. They come together. Hey, yeah, you got to be with someone. You stick it out as long as the thrill is there, and then you separate. That's life. Let's be mature persons and face the reality, you know? It's the way it goes. It's a problem. You show up at family reunions in New Zealand, you just never know who your new relations are going to be. Oh, that's who you're with now. And this is your set of relations. So it's like you have no idea what to expect. The result is that people become so callous, insensitive, and thick-skinned to protect themselves from such constant chaos in society in terms of relationships. You just never know who your family members are going to be. You just never know. Who is your father with now? Who is your mother with now? What set of relatives are they bringing to the scene? After a while, you just say, you do your thing, Mom, I'm doing mine. This is what Krishna points out in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Actually, it's Arjuna who points it out as an excuse not to fight. When the family traditions are destroyed, community welfare projects are canceled, and the whole society just glides to hell. Varnashram Dharma sounds exotic because there is prescribed behavior. Purusha Svabhava Vihitan. The human being, according to his acquired material qualities, obtains various prescriptions. And in that way, the human being can make spiritual progress and attain his original sarup, his real svabhava. Arjuna protested. He didn't want to fight. Krishna convinced him on two levels. Number one, in terms of your material svabhava. You're an administrator, you're a military person, meant to protect the innocent. And number two, Arjuna is Krishna's servant. He's meant to abide by the order of Krishna. How can Arjuna instruct Krishna in what is dharma when Krishna is dharma personified? It's kind of an arrogance. Of course, the whole scene is arranged by Krishna to teach us something. Look at the end of Bhagavad Gita. And there you find Arjuna has made a total reversal. Nashta moha smritir labdha karishye vachanam tava. Krishna, my illusion has been completely dispelled. I will act according to your words. Now what is a way we can view this dramatic declaration by Arjuna? Srila Prabhupada says that when Arjuna says this, karishye vachanam tava, I'll act according to what you say, he's taken sannyas. What? Taken sannyas? He's a householder. He's a military person. How it is that he's taken sannyas? Well, that is one of the mysteries of Bhagavad Gita. That by acting according to Krishna's direction, simply for Krishna's pleasure, no matter what your station in life, you're a renunciant. Arjuna says, I'll do whatever you say. It's that simple to become free from material nature. So even though Arjuna is a householder and an administrator, he's actually a sannyasi. He's basically telling Krishna, I'll do what you say, never mind if it takes me to hell or heaven. In the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was concerned. Krishna, if we fight this war, we'll create hell and we'll go to, at least I'll go to hell. That's the destination of those who destroy the Kula Dharma, the system of family responsibilities, family obligations. That'll all be finished because so many soldiers will die. I'll get the blame for all that. I'll reside in hell. I've heard it from authorities. Krishna, I've heard from authorities that those who destroy family traditions always reside in hell. And Krishna also makes use of heavenly arguments in the beginning as one means to convince Arjuna. The doors of the heavenly planets swing wide open for Kshatriyas who engage in a proper battle according to prescription, according to Dharma. These Kshatriyas are happy, these Vedic warriors, administrators are happy when such an opportunity comes, because this is an easy ticket to the heavenly planets. So you see in the beginning that both Arjuna fears hell, and Krishna is, to motivate Arjuna on a certain level, is saying, heaven, heaven, heaven. But what happens? By the time Bhagavad Gita ends, Arjuna says, I'll do whatever you say. I don't care about heaven or hell. That's sannyas. This is the inner spirit of bhakti, which is beyond our external designations. So you might say now, if the real spirit of bhakti is beyond external designations, why then is Yudhishthira Maharaj asking Bhishma Dev, who's on his deathbed, about the classifications of various types of human bodies and their situations? Lord Chaitanya did not stress Varnashram Dharma. Lord Chaitanya told everyone, chant Hare Krishna and dance. Golokera Prema Dana Harinama Sankirtana. As Narottam Das Thakur tells us, the Sankirtan movement has descended from the spiritual world. But we see that not even our own devotees are taking adequate shelter of Harinam. We see that even our own initiated devotees don't take their initiation vows seriously. They don't dedicate themselves to attentive chanting as a lifelong occupation. And we see that society is becoming increasingly more hostile for spiritual development. The work pressures, the time pressures, the traffic pressures. All that makes you wonder, how can anyone who becomes a grihastha truly survive in terms of their spiritual practices? They have to go through so much stress and strain. I was just hearing from one devotee a couple of days ago. He knew someone who was an Indian person who immigrated from abroad, and he had accounting qualifications, but he wasn't New Zealand certified as an accountant. So he had difficulty getting a job. But then he happened to meet someone high up who liked him and tested him and found he had top-notch abilities as an accountant. And so the person who was high up said, we're not hiring right now at our firm, but we'll direct you to another firm. I know someone there. And so a person applied for this entry-level accounting position based on a tip, personal connection. It's a good thing he had a personal connection to Tip, because he was told that actually, for this entry-level accounting position in Auckland, there are 2,000 applicants for one job. 2,000 applicants for one job. Naturally, when the job market becomes like that, the employers can really put the squeeze on you. Forget about the 40-hour work week. You forget about the 50-hour work week. You will do what you're told. Otherwise, there's a long line of persons waiting for your job. This is a very hostile atmosphere for spiritual development. Society is not meant to be organized in that way. This is why Yudhisthira is making these inquiries to Bhishma Dev. Yes, we exhort everyone to chant Hare Krishna. At the same time, we recognize that most people, as you may notice, most of our devotees are not overnight Paramahansas. What to do? They're working in the world, they're raising families. How can they function in such a deadly society? A society that's so debilitating for spiritual development. A society that puts up impediments in every way. So you get no peace. You get no clarity of vision. And peace and clarity of vision are essential for spiritual development. You get no time. Your mind is so agitated, stressed out, so much pressure is put on you. You feel trapped. This is why Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur passed to his son, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the mission of Varnashram Dharma, and Srila Prabhupada took it from his spiritual master. Because not all of our devotees are immediately transcendental. Even though they have the means to do that, we do have the means to do that. But how many of us are chanting and dancing as our life and soul sufficiently that the full benefits can shape our life? So what are we to do? Turn our backs on all of society? Too bad, you just didn't make the grade. Got no taste for the holy name. Tough luck. Meanwhile, those of us who think we have taste for the holy name will just focus on Madhurya Ras or something like that, Vrindavan Ras. Never mind about you. No. We want to help everyone, but we want to help everyone in the prescribed way. And the prescribed way, the Acharyas tell us, is a Varnashram Dharma. Recognizing that there are Vedic prescriptions for particular types of bodies. Just like a bull is guided by ropes through the ring in its nose, similarly the human being is guided by these prescriptions. The more we become duty-bound to the prescriptions for our particular status in life, the more we become purified. That's why Krishna in Bhagavad Gita says, "Let me explain, Arjuna, how every human being acting according to his qualities can attain perfection." It's interesting that Yudhisthira is asking Bhishma Dev, because Yudhisthira, just as Arjuna, Yudhisthira also went through a stage of crisis. After the battle of Kurukshetra, his crisis came. Whereas for Arjuna, the crisis came right at the start of the battle. For Yudhisthira, the crisis came in the waning moments of the battle when it was obvious all was over, the Pandavas had won. Yudhisthira is supposed to take the post. and govern the world. But he was feeling horrified. All this destruction, all this loss of life, just so I can be in charge? No way. This huge bloodbath, just for me to be the monarch? How will I ever get free of the sinful reactions coming from the deaths of so many people? He even accused himself of killing women and children. But no, Vedic warfare does not involve civilians, unlike sophisticated, civilized warfare of today. The first principle of warfare today is terrorize women and children. Strike terror into the population by attacking the civilians, and then you'll quickly get victory. But as you know, Vedic warfare means the professional military class goes to some isolated terrain, and there they duke it out, they fight. And whoever wins, that's who the citizens pay taxes to. And just as in the case of the Kauravas and the Pandavas, the warring Kshatriyas, the warring military persons, each actually think that I can take care of the people better than these other guys. Even Duryodhana and his clan were thinking like that. We'll take care of the people better. We'll give better protection. It's hard to understand when everyone knows political leaders these days are simply interested in mainly just their own gratification. But these Vedic Kshatriyas, these Vedic martial administrators, had that kind of pride that I can be a better controller by my control. And they were certainly interested in control, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Ishwara Bhava, the nature of a controller. By my control, people will benefit much more compared to if so-and-so is in charge. Yudhisthira's situation was that I've won, but look at the situation. I've actually lost. Just as Arjuna predicted. Arjuna said to Krishna at the beginning of the Gita, what's the point in fighting when if we win, we lose, and if we lose, we lose? If we win, all the persons who we should celebrate with, our extended family, they'll all be dead. So who are we going to rejoice with? And if we lose, well, that's also a disaster. So it's a lose-lose situation. These are the circumstances where Bhagavad Gita is launched. Now we're at the end of the battle, and Yudhisthira is reluctant. I'm not stepping on the throne. Forget it. So what to do? Not even Vyasadeva, who was present there, not even Krishna, who was present there, could convince Yudhisthira by Krishna's arrangement. Because as you know, Krishna wanted that Bhishma Dev demonstrate his bhakti by instructing Yudhisthira, even though Bhishma Dev, from the physical point of view, is in the most painful situation. His body shot through with so many arrows that he's described as lying on a bed of arrows. But Krishna wants to show that his devotee is beyond material influence. Bhishma Dev is a real devotee, a fully developed bhakta, beyond material influence, and Krishna wants to demonstrate how crystal clear is Bhishma Dev's consciousness, even though he's on his deathbed and also in such an excruciatingly painful situation. You're at the point now where Yudhisthira, encouraged by Bhishma Dev, is going to ask, how should I govern? Bhishma Dev begins to describe, first of all, there are the varnas, the four occupational duties. That varna system, varna dharma, means interaction by attachment. You're attached to acting in a certain way. Do that for Krishna. You're interacting with society and the world according to a certain propensity you have. You're attached to acting in that way. You have to be attached to acting that way because that's your propensity. Okay. You'll still get purified by interacting based on this attachment if you follow these prescriptions. And then you have the ashrama dharma. The four ashramas, as stated in the translation, they're all about counteraction by detachment. Counteracting the material lusts by detachment. So much so that, as Prabhupada writes in the purport, sex indulgence, even with a legitimate wife, must also be controlled. And therefore, family control will automatically follow. Prescriptions for everything. All aimed at producing the maximum benefit for the human form of life. So you have counteraction by detachment. Counteracting the material sense gratification tendency. By detachment. All the ashrams actually are meant for teaching detachment in their own way. And interaction by attachment. Interacting with the world according to your propensity, which naturally you're attached to. We often explain there's a very subtle difference between karma yoga and bhakti yoga. Karma yoga means you're attached to acting in a certain way, but you offer the result to Krishna. Full bhakti means you offer the result to Krishna, but also you're not attached to acting in a certain way. It's whatever Krishna wants, however Krishna wants it, all for Krishna's pleasure. That is full bhakti. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu demonstrated that. Yet, out of mercy, the devotees of Lord Chaitanya are interested in organizing society so that everyone can make gradual progress to the ultimate goal of life. It doesn't take much of a brain to see how society today destroys people's peace, destroys their clarity, destroys their sanity. All in the name of progress. Why is this Varnashram Dharma system special? Why that system and not so many other systems that human beings can make up? Varnashram Dharma is a material system, but it's Krishna's system. It's Krishna's personal sociology. Therefore, the acharyas stress it. Krishna means every word that he says in Bhagavad Gita. From Rasahamab Sukantiya, he's the taste in water. Prabhashmi Shashi Suryo, he's the light of the sun and the moon. Dharma Viruddha Bhuteshu, Kamosmi, Bharatashava, I am sex life according to Dharma. Krishna means every word he says. And similarly, Chaturvarnya Mayastristam Guna Karma Vibhagasa. As Prabhupada writes in the purport, the conception of four castes and four orders of life, as planned by the Lord himself, Bhagavad Gita 4.13, is to accelerate transcendental qualities of the individual person. Once you begin to take Bhagavad Gita straight, you see indeed that Krishna gives everything, even a plan for how to live in the material world so that one's transcendental qualities are accelerated in their development. So you can gradually realize your spiritual identity. Of course, applying Varnashram Dharma in the present day is bewildering. Yet, we can't just push it aside because it's Krishna's program for how to live in the world, how to organize the world. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave this program, Krishna's program, to Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur gave it to Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada gave it to us. So the least we can do is not dismiss it as irrelevant. How can we dismiss anything Krishna says as irrelevant? This is Bhagavad Gita as it is. Arjuna saying, Krishye Vachanam Tava, I totally accept everything you said, Krishna. Of course, there is a bias against that kind of attitude these days. You don't totally accept anything everyone says. What to speak of totally? Why should you accept everything someone says? Either it's nothing or you pick and choose. I'll accept a bit of what you say, a bit of what you say, a bit of what you say. Yeah, this is contemporary life. Free, individual. Hunt and peck. A little bit here, a little bit there. Make your own blend. Freedom. No, it's slavery to the modes of material nature. The whole purpose of Bhagavad Gita is to get you free from material nature. When Arjuna says, Krishye Vachanam Tava, as we said earlier, he's taken sannyas, the real way. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the real sannyasi is not simply one who has the external characteristics. The real sannyasi is one who sacrifices everything for Krishna's pleasure. So Arjuna is showing that how that can be done even as a military and family man. The more we understand how debilitating, devastating the society is that we live in, the more we'll see reality. If we're sentimental, if we're lacking the knowledge to deconstruct the fantasies that are so much a part of people's lives, we'll never actually be able to benefit ourselves or others. And in fact, we'll be attracted again to participate in the mass illusion. That's not so bad. Everything is beautiful in its own way. I want to be free. I don't want to walk around thinking, I got to watch this, I got to watch that. I just want to talk to who I want to talk to. Mix it up, you know? Be like everyone else, except believe in Krishna. But the more you actually understand Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, the more you see that you're living in a contaminated atmosphere and you have to protect yourself. This is why Yudhisthira is asking Bhishmadev, tell me how society should be organized so that people can experience advancement. And Bhishmadev does that. As Prabhupada points out in the purport, you'll find a more lengthy exposition of Bhishmadev's instructions to Yudhisthira in the Mahabharata. In Mahabharata, you see Krishna, if you don't understand who is Krishna, you'll see him as a diplomat, trying to negotiate peace before the war. You'll see Krishna as a schemer who's making sure that his people win. Then, if you don't know what you're talking about, you don't understand Krishna, you'll turn to Bhagavatam and you'll see Krishna as a playboy. He's got all the best teenage girls. You'll see Krishna as a child stealing butter, lifting hills, And you're not able to put the two together. And that's what many are bewildered. Those who don't understand Krishna by hearing from Krishna himself. They think, well, there's this Vasudeva Krishna in Mahabharata. He's one person. He's living as a Kshatriya. He's a diplomat. He's making schemes. And then there's the pastoral Krishna in the Bhagavatam, who likes the forests and the villages and the cows and butter and the cowgirls. How to understand that the Supreme Absolute Truth is that one Supreme Personality of Godhead who has variety. Variety of pastimes. Varieties of devotees. Varieties of relationships. To see that takes knowledge. Unless we become wise, we cannot understand Krishna. And wisdom begins with understanding we are different than the body and mind. That's simply the beginning. How to give people the qualifications for understanding they're different from the body and mind. That's the whole purpose of the Varnashram system. To gradually bring people along so that they become clear-headed enough to understand the science of Krishna. Yes, some fortunate ones will immediately pick it up, no matter what their situation, no matter how degraded their situation is. By good fortune, they see the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and they grab it. But Srila Prabhupada's point was that not everyone is that fortunate. The devotee, out of compassion, wants the whole world to become qualified to take up devotional service. Therefore, what do we offer? We offer Krishna's personal system for organizing the material world. And have no doubt, Varnashram Dharma is material. But it's Krishna's material system. That's the big difference. Varnashram Dharma is all about bodies and minds. How to organize them. But it's Krishna's material system, his own. And he takes ownership of it in Bhagavad Gita. Chaturvarna Mayastristam Guna Karma Vibhagas. The more we take Bhagavad Gita straight on, like Arjuna did, Krishye Vachanam Tama. Krishna, I totally accept everything you say. Rather than pick and choose, the more we become solid in our understanding of Krishna, the more wise we become.